What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Built Different podcast. My name is Zach Clinton. I'll be your host, and as we continue to grow, I'll have friends joining me each week to interview some of the leading experts in the fields of motivational speaking, mental health, ministry, and even sports. Our goal is to instill hope, encouragement, and motivation in and through your life today, and our prayer is that after each episode, you'd be more equipped and encouraged to look, love, and live more like Christ from the inside out. That's our definition of what it means to be built different. So I hope you're ready. You better buckle up. Let's roll. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to this week's edition of the Built Different podcast. I'll be your host, Zach Clinton. And as always, I hope and pray you had a blessed weekend or having a great start to your week. But if you haven't, then I believe you're in the right place. And my prayer is that you would find some hope, encouragement, and motivation in and throughout today's conversation. That being said, you guys, today we're going to be exploring the topic of how we can suffer well. We all know that storms, challenges, and adversity, they're a part of this life. But today we're going to be unpacking how we can find security in the midst of our suffering. Joining us on the podcast today to bless us with his wealth of wisdom, knowledge, and experience is a dear friend of ours here at the AACC. He's best-selling author, speaker, and renowned psychiatrist, Dr. Kurt Thompson. But before we dive into today's conversation, I wanted to remind you of our premier sponsor for the podcast, which I just mentioned. It's our parent company and association here called the American Association of Christian Counselors. Here at AACC, we are committed to assisting Christian counselors, the entire community of care, licensed professionals, pastors, and lay church members with little or no formal training. Our vision here at AACC really revolves around two critical dimensions. First, we seek to serve the Christian church worldwide by helping it become more mature in Christ while taking on God's heart of love and sacrificial care. And secondly, we seek to serve, educate, and equip professionals in the mental health field through continuing education opportunities such as our world and national conferences, live webinars, other training events, and our printed education and training materials. We are committed to helping the church equip God's people to love and care for each other in the same spirit that Christ loves and cares for us. To find out more about all that we're doing here at the AACC or to check out the countless resources we have to offer, please visit our website at AACC.net. Again, that's AACC.net. Now, to get back to the heart of our conversation today, we'll actually be trying to answer the question, in the face of personal and global suffering, is it possible to live with hope rather than despair? And again, joining us today to unpack his newest book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope, is a psychiatrist, speaker, and award-winning author, Dr. Kurt Thompson. Through the exploration of Apostle Paul's experience of love, secure attachment, and the deeply felt sense of God's abiding presence carrying him through the challenges he faced, we pray that you too would recognize that God can transform your grief into a lasting peace that surpasses all understanding, and how that reality can help us not just survive, but flourish in the presence of suffering. So with that being said, my friends, let's welcome our special guest, Dr. Kurt Thompson. Dr. Kurt, thank you so much for joining me today.
Zach, great to be here.
It's always a blessing, every opportunity I get, just to glean from your wealth of wisdom and knowledge and experience. We're here gathered together with 7,000 others in a sold-out crowd at our 2023 AACC No Hope, that's K-N-O-W Hope, World Conference in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, wait, can I just stop? Because like, yes, there was 7,000 people, No Hope. I mean, that was pretty seamless, and I'm glad that you clarified that.
That's right. Thank you. Clarified it. Sir, we're gathered here in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's just such a blessing to come together and to be educated, to be equipped, and to be encouraged. Something you talk a lot about is our deepest longing to be known. Sir, speak and just to the significance of events and gatherings like this and helping remind people that they're not alone in this fight.
Well, in some respects, I think, Zach, it's kind of like going to church.
Yeah.
In that we can be in a room full of people and feel pretty deeply isolated.
Yeah.
And so just because we're with 7,000 people, in and of itself, is not enough. What we really want to be is intentional.
Yeah.
About what we do when we come together. And I think, I mean, one of the things that I love about AACC, I've just witnessed this. I mean, I was sitting, signing books, and people were coming to me, and they would come a number of times. People had come by two, they'd met each other in line.
Yeah.
And by the time they got to me, they were talking about how they had met each other, and they're going to stay in contact. And I would dare say that in your average concert where everybody's waiting to get into the show and standing in line, you're not going to necessarily get to the end of the line and go into the arena and say, oh, I just met my friend, we're going to stay in touch. Mm-hmm. And I would say that one of the things that this conference does is create space, creates opportunity for people who are followers of Jesus and who have a common longing to do good work in the realm of mental health care, not just to exchange ideas, but to be deeply connected in their own emotional states, their own sense of who they are, so that people really do have the potential for coming away from this gathering with a deeper sense of not being alone with the work that they're doing.
Mm. Like you said, deeply connected, right? Mm. Not just sitting in a room feeling isolated, but being intentional about putting yourself out there and getting to know somebody in that manner. Mm-hmm. So let's be honest. Life can be flat out painful. There is a lot of suffering going on in this world. I think of John 16:33, which says, in this world, you will have trouble. Or Job chapter 5, verses 6 and 7, for hardship does not spring from the soil, nor does trouble sprout from the ground. Yet man is born to trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. It's this idea that pain and suffering, they're inevitable in this life. Hmm. Recently, as of this recording 2 weeks ago, you just wrote your newest book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. Hmm. Dr. Kurt, what's at the heart of this message, but also what do you want every reader to walk away with?
Well, I think, Zach, I think the first thing I would say is that this book emerged as a natural next step from the first three books, and particularly from the book that just preceded it, in that if we are going to acknowledge how we are made as humans to flourish, which was really the content of the first book, if we then see that evil is going to use shame as its primary weapon to disintegrate and to devour the creation, which is the second book. And the third book is that we really want to answer that and respond to that shame, not just by coming up with more information, but we respond to it with the beauty of presence. Mm-hmm. And presence, imagining beauty, can emerge from the places where we think it would never be able to come from. But in that whole course, the entire arc of those first three works, one of the things that is a common thread through all of it is the reality that if you're a human, you suffer.
Yeah.
And we suffer for three reasons. We suffer because of things that have happened to us. We suffer because of things that we do to ourselves, and that by far contains the largest volume of our suffering. But we also suffer in a third way, because we are choosing to follow the King. Mm-hmm. The whole notion of me giving up my addictions, the whole notion of me giving up my impatience, my envy, my penchant for wanting to undress a woman who's not my wife in my mind, my head, all the things. Like, I tell people I'm a professional sinner. I'm like, I don't mess around with it. I'm like really good at it. If that's going to be transformed, it's going to be a painful process for me to take off all of that clothing, because there will be parts of me that don't want to. As much as I long for Jesus to have me be in his heaven, have me be with him, I want him to be with me and have me be with him until he actually does show up, and then he starts placing demands on me,
yeah.
The demands of letting me, the demands of my letting him love me in those places where I hate myself the most and find it hard to expose these parts of me to other people. And so there is a certain suffering that takes place. The suffering that we experience as believers sometimes comes because of what happens to us from the outside, because people don't love Jesus, because people are themselves angry and hurt and so forth, and we end up being the recipients of that anger and distress and so forth. But a lot of our suffering comes because we choose to submit ourselves to the process of sanctification. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what Jesus was doing, right? He learned obedience through suffering. This is what we read about in the book of Hebrews. He learned obedience through suffering. Like the dude is the Son of God. Like, why has he got to learn it like that? Like, well, right. Because in some sense, there is a sense like this is what makes him fully human.
Mm-hmm.
He is literally taking on the role of what it means for us to be us, yet without sin. And he then knows that this is really hard work for us. And so I think in some respects, to name that suffering is in the room is important, because it's important for us to honor the suffering that people experience. We need to honor it. We need to not pretend it's not happening. You know, we have all kinds of responses to it. My suffering is not nearly as bad as the people who are in Eastern Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So it can't be that bad. Right. So I'm not going to talk about it. And so what it's going to do, it's going to fester. And evil will find a way to come and use it in that regard. Or my suffering is so great that there's nothing anybody can do about it.
Right.
And we have a range of different ways of responding to suffering. You know, Eastern metaphysics wants to acknowledge that it's there, but that it's not really real. We're gonna do what we can to just kind of like let it go into the mist. We're going to meditate and be present, so present that we'll just recognize, oh, suffering isn't really a real thing. It's just a figment of my imagination, ultimately. Western metaphysics would say, oh, suffering is a real thing, but it's always bad, and we need to do everything we can to eliminate it. And anytime it's still around, there's nothing good about it that can be done or understood. We wouldn't understand it that way. The Christian narrative, the biblical narrative, is the only story that honors shame, that honors suffering. Wow. It's the only story that honors suffering. Because it's our King,
that's right,
who put it on himself to be with us in this way. And in this way, God not only says, well, I get it,
right,
he also is saying, I'm going to redeem it, and I'm actually even going to redeem the very nature of suffering by loving everybody so well. And thereby, I will find that the suffering experience itself is part of how I am being redeemed. I have my story is that I was the youngest of three sons, three older brothers. I was the youngest, and all three of them are much older than me. Hmm. I've lost all three to cancer. Hmm. And when the first of my three brothers who died in 2004, when he died, as he was approaching his death, he said to me, and this is a guy whose cancer transformed him. Into a man who loved Jesus and loved his families in ways that were brand new for him and were different from the way he had been 3 years earlier. And he said to me, you know, I would not wish this pancreatic cancer on my worst enemy. He said, but I can truly say that in light of the presence of Jesus, I'm not sorry that this has happened. And that was a testimony to me for, and it's an example of what the Bible is really getting at when it's describing what it means for us to share in the sufferings of the King.
It's amazing as you continue to expound upon just the significance of suffering and how we always recognize, and like you said, as believers, we almost celebrate as we acknowledge the suffering of our King. Hmm. Something that I always share whenever I'm, you know, giving a motivational talk or whatnot, I always share a story about Into the Storm, where there's only one animal, right, that will run into the midst of the storm, which is the buffalo. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, Dr. Kurt, what they'll try to do is they'll try to outrun their pain, and they'll try to outrun their suffering. Mm-hmm. But I always want people to try to develop the necessary ingredients, not to outrun their pain, but to outlast it. In your book, The Deepest Place, you provide us with an invitation to explore the Apostle Paul's experience and journey through life, and how through a unique perspective and deeply rooted relationship with God, he was able to endure the challenges that he faced. Kurt, I'm interested, what are some of the benefits of suffering that you have found over time, and even when studying Paul's life?
Well, I think even the language that we use in terms of like how we would describe that, I would say I might tweak the language a bit and say, I don't know that I would describe it in terms of benefits of suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I'd like to order three more rounds of suffering, please, because I've experienced the benefits of this. But we do experience benefits as a byproduct of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about suffering from an interpersonal neurobiological perspective. We talk about suffering as how we as human beings respond to pain over time. We have pain, we have some kind of emotional or physical malady, some kind of distress of some kind. And our response to that insult, our response to that pain, is how we discern what our suffering is like. Over time, if my pain is a pinprick that lasts for a second and it doesn't really go that deep, and it's not, I don't really suffer. If I'm told that I have Lyme disease, if I had a lengthy experience of sexual abuse as a kid that is not magically being transformed, my suffering may extend long into the future because it takes time for me to work through the pain. What that creates for me is the opportunity for me to be loved in ways that I yet have to be loved. And as I tell folks when we're training clinicians, and my friend Catherine Wolf likes to say that we all have disabilities. It's just some are more visible than others.
That's right.
And when it comes to disabilities, we have a great disability when it comes to loving one another. We're not very good at it. That's patently obvious. But we have an even greater disability that we are often unaware of, and that is I'm even less able to be open to receiving love.
Yep.
And when I am in pain over time, it creates opportunity if I am willing to do the work of allowing people to be present with me and for me. It allows me the opportunity to develop secure attachment. It allows me to experience my pain being transformed, not because somebody has magically come along and changed the nature of the felt sense of distress itself, but because my mind is now paying more attention to the people who are with me in the room than it is necessarily paying attention to the pain itself. And so my awareness of presence begins literally, neurally, to intermingle with the shame and the distress and ultimately the story that I tell that has historically left me in this place of woundedness. That is how, but I typically probably wouldn't do that if the pain wasn't driving me in that direction. And there is this sense in which when we talk about atonement, the word atonement has lots of theological meanings. It's not just one thing, but one of the things that it is, it comes from the Old English word at one meant. And this notion that Jesus is fully at one with us. And as we read in 1 Peter, that he even preaches to the dead. This notion that he is so fully with our pain that the question is not, is God willing to be with me in my pain? The question is, am I willing to allow myself to receive his presence
right.
in my pain? And this is not easy for us to do. I mean, we don't live in our suffering in poor ways because we're stupid.
Right.
Or because we're weak, or because we're not trying to work hard enough. We do so because we're afraid, and we're afraid of the shame that is waiting for us. If I am going to allow you to be present with me in the middle of this moment, at what point are you going to get tired of listening to me talk about my pain? The story's already in my head.
Right.
And you're going to say to me, no, like, dude, like, I'm not leaving the room.
Right.
I'm like, okay, yeah, right. Until you do. This is the story that I'm telling, and I'm going to have to practice over time allowing you to prove not just yourself to me, I'm going to have to practice allowing you to have me prove to the parts of me that don't believe you that they're worthy, that they're loved, and that takes a long time. I mean, you know, the father in Mark 9, when Jesus comes off the Transfiguration Mount and, you know, he heals his son and he says, like, I believe, maybe 10%, the other 90% don't. Please help my unbelief.
Yes.
It's like every day for me.
Mm-hmm.
I got lots of parts of me that don't believe. Right.
That's right. I'm Zach Clinton here, Vice President of the AACC, joined by renowned psychiatrist Dr. Kurt Thompson on our Built Different podcast platform. We're talking about his new book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. Up to this point, sir, a lot of what we've talked about remind me of some of my favorite verses in Scripture. James chapter 1, verses 2-4, right? Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever we face trials of many kinds, for we know that the testing of our faith goes on to produce perseverance. So let perseverance finish its race so that we may be mature, complete, lacking nothing. You see, I believe, and just similar to you, that we don't consider it joy because of the pain or the suffering we endure, but we can consider it joy, pure joy because of what the pain and suffering can produce in and through us if we allow God to let it. You talk a lot in your book about how perseverance can actually change our brain and reshape our imagination. So speak to that process of neuroplasticity and the significance of perseverance.
Well, I think first, Zach, I would want to just highlight and remind our listeners of what most of us would agree with but are not necessarily paying attention to, and that is that we live in a world that is forming us, that is training us actively to be unable to delay gratification. It's training us to need what I want, how I want it, to be delivered when I want it.
Yeah.
And that includes pain relief. And so the notion that I'm going to have to take time, effort, and energy over time. I mean, you're a sports guy, right?
Yep.
You've had
train. Yep.
Right?
A
it's lot. Not like you don't just step to the plate one time.
Right.
You it's like cut after cut after cut
it's
after
practice,
cut after
practice,
cut after
yep.
cut. It's practice, practice, practice. And we don't like that. And it's difficult. I mean, and yet the people of the New Testament who were going to be hearing these words mm-hmm. from Paul being read to them,
yeah.
said out loud to them, they would know that the way that we make changes is through long-haul practice. That's how we make changes. We like to say that the things in the world that are the most durably beautiful
yeah.
take the longest time to create.
Mm-hmm.
Snowflakes, gorgeous.
Yep.
They're gone in a heartbeat,
yep.
right? Grand Canyon, different story. Takes a long time. From a neuroplasticity standpoint, the beauty of perseverance is, we would say, like, well, if you want to learn to play the piano, even if you're my age, it's going to be better for you to practice 15 minutes every day for 6 days a week than it is to practice for 2 hours or 3 hours one day a week.
Right.
I'm going to do small things over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Neurons don't tend to grow any faster than about 2 millimeters per day when all of the circumstances are lined up correctly for them.
Right.
But here's the thing. If I'm willing to practice in the context of community, if I'm practicing with a coach, if I'm practicing with other players, if I'm not just by myself doing this, if we are doing this work together, I recognize that you're working hard. You recognize that I'm working hard. We both recognize that this is really hard.
Yep.
And you say to me sometime, this is really hard. Let's come back tomorrow. We'll get back to the cage tomorrow. We're going to do this again. This is what, when Jesus says, I'm the vine and you're the branches, I want you to stay in me. Part of what he's saying is, I want you to stay with me in a persevering way. I want you to practice as you watch me practicing. Practicing, practicing, practicing. Slowly, small steps over time. And what we come to discover is that my sense of my capacity to tolerate distress in the presence of others when I'm practicing over time begins to increase. And I begin to take great joy, actually, in my awareness that I'm actually not the same person that I was 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 5 years ago.
Yep.
But I'm also able only to take that in because somebody else is telling me this.
Mm.
Evil loves the notion of our being deeply convicted that we need to change the world yesterday.
Yep.
Evil does not want us to get wind of the fact that Jesus is not worried about our pace.
Mm.
Jesus is not worried about our benchmarks. Jesus is not interested in our benchmarks. Jesus is interested in who we are becoming.
Mm.
And he knows that this takes a very long time. He could have let Peter go.
Yeah.
But he comes back and he asks Peter, not just once, not just twice. I mean, who knows? It could have been 30 times. I mean, right? And because Jesus is serious about turning over every stone where shame and trauma are hiding out, he doesn't want any of that taking away from our energy that he wants to use to collaboratively with him create beauty and goodness in the world. And so when we are willing to practice, persevere, we then go on to develop the character that we long to become, not so much because the character is the thing I'm trying to become, but because it's a byproduct of allowing myself to be loved in the middle of doing hard things over and over again.
I love that. I've often heard it said that like hunger drives us to get something to eat or thirst drives us to get something to drink, pain should ultimately drive us to the one that brings true healing and not just a coping strategy that momentarily changes a feeling.
Right.
Dr. Kurt, in knowing, right, that you talk about suffering, we've really unpacked all of that. We've talked about neuroplasticity. For the listener out there today who's maybe struggling, or maybe the people helper who sit with clients in some of their deepest and darkest kind of hiding places, what are some practical tips, some practical strategies, some practical steps that we can begin taking today that in the midst of our suffering, we can begin forming this sense of hope?
Well, and I'm glad you asked it in that way, that to recognize that, first of all, our hope is indeed formed.
Yes.
It is not this item that we either have or we don't have, right, that either lands in our laps if we're lucky or doesn't if we're not. It is a thing that we form through perseverance and through character by virtue of practicing being in those challenging moments with someone who I'm allowing to love me, and in so doing, that experience of being seen, soothed, safe, and secure in the very context of my suffering begins to give me an experience of knowing what it's like to be nourished in the middle of my pain.
Yeah.
And when I embed that memory into my brain and collect more memories like that, what I begin to do is to collect a series of memories that are going to become my anticipated future, which is that when I experience pain in the future, I will be okay.
Yeah.
My pain is not going to define who I am. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't exist. But it will not be the defining quality for who I am. And so it's important for us to name, as clinicians, it's important for us to name with our clients who we're working with, to name for them, hope is not a thing that you either have or you don't have. Mm-hmm. Inform them. This is something that we are going to form over time. You're not going to form it.
Yep.
We are going to form it together. That's number one. Another thing I would have them say, I would, for them to know, it's really important for clinicians to name for patients that they are suffering.
Mm.
It's important to use that language.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times when I find myself saying this to someone, and they'll say, "Oh, I don't know that I'm actually suffering." Oh, and I'll ask, "Well, tell me what it is about your experience that is not that."
Right.
And then they will appeal to how their suffering is by comparison, not what someone else's is that's so grossly obvious and so forth. And I would say that even that deflection is a way for them to attempt to go away from where they suffer.
Yeah.
It's a way to protect themselves from the things that they fear, including the felt sense of shame that I'm even having any complaint to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is important for us to name the suffering. It is important for us to inform patients that this kind of work is going to be work that they will do the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of their suffering will not necessarily remain the same, but they will suffer until they're dead if they're serious about following Jesus.
Yeah.
Because we are always going to be asking for him to take off one more piece of that garment that I've used to protect myself from him, to keep myself from God. And I think the last thing I would say is that, remember that we like to say that suffering is a function of primarily of two different domains of integration in the mind. One has to do with this domain of time, the temporal domain. Like, what is this sense of, like, my anticipated future and what I'm doing as I imagine my future? And then what we call the narrative domain. What is the story that I'm telling about the future? And so we recognize that a lot of my suffering that I think is just happening to me independently, there's nothing I can do about it, is a function of a lot of what I'm doing that I'm not aware that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so as clinicians begin to name suffering, to name that the hope that we are going to work on is something we're going to form together, that forming process is going to take time. It might take days, weeks, months, the rest of your life. That Jesus is more concerned about who you are becoming than the benchmarks that we make. And then that we are going to enter into this in a process whereby which we really do take seriously the story that you've been telling yourself all your life, about your life. And we're going to begin to recognize how the first two ways in which we suffer, not only like what happened to me, but what I'm now doing to myself by telling my story the way that I do, can be corrected in order for me to no longer be suffering in those first two ways, but then also begin to discover what it means to have joy even in the place of this third form in which we suffer, because this is the joy that comes when we are moving deeper and deeper into the body of Jesus, being loved by him in the same way.
I was listening to a pastor not too long ago who closed out his sermon by praying over his congregation. He said, God, even if you do nothing else, you've already done enough. And I felt like that was the embodiment, right, of that understanding that Christ embodied hope for each and every one of us to cling to form, right, that can help us endure in the midst of suffering. Dr. Kurt, how we always like to close our time here on the podcast together is by leaving the mic open for our guests to just share a pressing word that God has placed on their heart for such a time as this. So to the person I would love for you to speak to is the one out there today who is in the midst of a suffering season. They're discouraged. They're disappointed. They're sucking wind, Dr. Kurt. What's the message of hope, encouragement, and motivation that you want to spark them with and leave us with today?
I think the first thing I would want to say, Zach, is to our listeners who are in that space, I would want to say I'm really sorry. If I were talking to that person in person, I would want to hear more of their story. And I would want them to know that they couldn't tell me too much of their story. I would want to hear as much as they would want to talk about for as long as they would want to talk about it. I would want them to imagine you or me being in the room with them, knowing that whatever else they have to say that feels painful, like, we want to hear it.
That's right.
And that when we read about the Jesus of the Gospels, that Jesus is one, when he says, come unto me, you who are weary, heavy laden, you who suffer, come to me. I would want them to begin to imagine what that voice sounds like, and what his face looks like, and what his body posture is like when he invites them into a space in which, even if he doesn't immediately change all their circumstances, they know that even in those circumstances, they're not going to be by themselves, but instead they are going to be deeply loved. And that's not something that we can experience merely because you and I tell somebody this on a podcast. Yeah. It's only going to happen because whoever's listening is going to eventually find themselves in some kind of embodied relationship with a real human being who will want to be with the parts of them that suffer the most, be with them in the room, and not leave until the work is done.
Isaiah 43, 1 and 2 says, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze, right? You are not alone in the midst of your suffering. Dr. Kurt, where can our listeners and viewers find out more about you and your resources and all the incredible things you're doing?
Well, thanks, Zach. I think you could find them on my website, kurtthompsonmd.com. I would encourage listeners to check out the Being Known podcast. Pepper Sweeney, my co-host, and I we're just now beginning the recording of our eighth season.
Let's go.
In about 2 years, we've had 2 million downloads. So we're really kind of pleased with that. And I don't know about what that means, but 2 million sounds like a big number to me. I don't like, whatever. I mean, it's a lot
it's
of
a
well, something.
Big
yeah.
Number.
And you can also follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can also see some of my work in the Center for Being Known, which is a nonprofit that we do that is really trying to promote the work of this interpersonal neurobiology and its intersection with Christian spiritual formation. We have an annual conference that's coming up here in October, and you can sign up for confessional community work You can do that there through the thecbk.org is a way for you to get that information as well.
I challenge all of our listeners and viewers to go to KurtThompsonMD.com, listen to the Being Known podcast, but also go purchase his new book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. He's a world changer. Dr. Kurt Thompson, all of us here at the American Association of Christian Counselors, we love you. We appreciate you. Seriously, you're a part of our family. Thank you so much for your time and being on the show with me today.
Zach, thanks so much. Real pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, my friends, as we close, two verses that I simply wanted to leave you with today. The first is a verse that's often brought up in our mental health space and discussed quite a bit, being Philippians 4, verse 6, which says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, through prayer and petition with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God." But let's be honest, you guys, that can be a pretty tough assignment when it feels like everything in life is working against you and the wheels are coming off your bus. However, one of the things I've realized over the years is that I missed the pivotal part of that passage where we have to go back a few verses in verse 4 where Paul says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice." But then verse 5 is instructive here as it says, "Let your gentleness or your confidence be known to all people. The Lord is near." See, the Apostle Paul strengthened himself even in the most difficult of circumstances by believing that the Lord was near, that the Lord was close by, that the Lord was in his midst. He practiced the presence and power of God in his life every single day, no matter what. Therefore, my prayer for you today is that you too would believe that he is near to you as well, that he sees you, that he loves you. And as one of my favorite worship songs says, that he would never lead you to leave you. Trust and believe that he will see you through today. Remember the infamous words from the great Rocky Balboa films back in the day. Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody's going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. You guys, pain's inevitable, but some of you have to understand that your perspective is what's keeping you on the canvas of the ring we call life. This feeling sorry for yourself, victim mentality, is only expounding upon the pain that you're experiencing. So therefore, the second verse I want to leave you with today is James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. They say, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith goes on to produce perseverance. So let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature, complete, lacking nothing." In other words, you can view the pain that you're going through the lens of complete joy, not because of the circumstance you find yourself in, not because of the trial, not because of the suffering, but because of what that circumstance, trial, and suffering can and will produce in and through you if you let it. Maybe the very thing you think Satan is using to defeat or destroy you, God is using to strengthen and develop you. So today, rather than believing your suffering is a punishment from God, start believing that your suffering is God pruning and preparing you for something more. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. Because when you find your security in Christ, my friend, you can weather any storm. That being said, as always, you guys, I just wanted to thank you again for joining us today. And just to remind you that we love being a part of your life. We hope to see you right back here next week on the Built Different Podcast.